Welcome to the Basic Christianity Podcast, a college lecture series by ancient language and biblical scholar, Dr. Stanley D. Walters, presented by his student, Dr. Stanley D. Williams. The 33 lectures are found in Dr. Walters' fully illustrated book, Basic Christianity, Facts, Evidences, Reasons, available at ninevahscrossing.com. Lecture 7, The Fourth Gospel.
Some have questioned the authenticity of the fourth gospel, the Gospel of John. They claim the book is edifying, but it doesn't really come from John the Apostle, who was an eyewitness, and therefore we can't believe the picture it gives us of Jesus. As a matter of fact, there's only one story in the fourth gospel which is found in the other three. That's apart from Christ's last week. The last week, of course, is given by all. The one story found in all four Gospels is the feeding of the 5,000. Everything else that John gives us, apart from the last week, is new material. All right, now what do we do with these differences? Are they so pronounced as to cause us to say the fourth gospel cannot be trusted? Some have said that. They claim the fourth gospel is too different from the synoptic gospels to be authentic. But there are simple explanations for these differences. Let's take them up in turn.
Geography.
Where did Jesus have his ministry? Was it in the northern territory of Galilee or in the southern region of Judea? Perhaps we don't have to choose. Perhaps he was both places, and the synoptics, for reasons of their own, have chosen to give us the northern, and John has chosen us to give us the southern. There is a suggestion of this in small evidences that each writing knows that Jesus was in the other place, even though that particular writing doesn't tell us so, or at least doesn't tell us any stories about it. For example, in John, which represents Jesus' ministry as in and about the holy city, John 7:1 says, "Afterwards, Jesus went about in Galilee. He wished to avoid Judea because Jews were looking for a chance to kill him." Now, John doesn't tell us any stories about Jesus in Galilee. Perhaps he thought he didn't need to, since the synoptics had done so well. But he does know that Jesus was there. And somewhat the same thing is suggested by Matthew 23:37. This is a statement by Jesus as he approached Jerusalem, according to the synoptics, for the first time, and he will be killed when he gets there. Here is what he says when he gets there. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that murders the prophets and stones the messengers sent to her. How often have I longed to gather your children as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, but you would not let me." The hint is in those words, "how often." It suggests, indirectly at least, that Jesus had been there before as an adult. Now, maybe he wouldn't have had to have been there to have longed, of course, but I think there is at least a hint here that when Jesus came to Jerusalem for his last time, even the synoptics report a suggestion that he had been there many times before. And so I'm going to suggest that the synoptics and John give us complementary pictures of Jesus' ministry in terms of place.
Chronology.
There is also a chronological difference between the synoptic gospels and the fourth gospel. The synoptics cover about a year of Jesus' ministry, and John covers about 2.5 years. So we don't have to choose one or the other because the 2.5 years includes the 1 year of the synoptic time. We have, therefore, a total ministry of 2.5 years with one phase of it lasting about a year.
Style.
Now, I've just mentioned the differences between the northern and the southern locations for Jesus' ministry. In the north, the people were mainly merchants, businessmen, farmers, and agricultural workers. In the South, the people were primarily trained theologians and students of the law. Now, a speaker, if he's worth anything, can adapt himself to his audience. If I speak about these particular things I'm talking about this morning to a group of high school students, I will do it a little differently than I'm doing with you. And by the same token, if I lecture to a group of seminary students, I will do it differently than with you. And should we not suppose that in dealing with different classes of people, Jesus could adapt himself to them? So among the tradespeople and farmers of Galilee, Jesus spoke in an everyday style that reached them and ministered to their needs, whereas in the holy city, amongst the doctors of the law, Jesus addressed them in the more abstract and theological manner that was appropriate for his conversations with them. They didn't understand at all. Nicodemus didn't. But I think that we can account for some of these differences between the style Jesus used by the different audiences. Now, there is something thrown in here for free. Let's consider Matthew 11:25-27.
At that time, Jesus declared, "I thank thee, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that thou hast hidden these things from the wise and understanding and revealed them to babes. Yea, Father, for such was thy gracious will. All things have been delivered to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son chooses to reveal him."
It's a passage just before Jesus says,
"Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest."
All scholars recognize this passage, though it occurs in the Synoptic Gospels, as the style characteristic of Jesus' discourse in John. It puzzles the scholars very much. They don't know what to make of this statement in the Synoptics, but couched in style that is characteristic of Jesus in John, and not Jesus in the Synoptics. Well, maybe it only shows that it's the same Jesus, talking both places and not a different Jesus, as some of the scholars would have us think.
Picture of Christ.
Now, the picture of Christ does differ between these two groups, but it is a difference of emphasis only. In fact, the persons who say the Synoptics do not know a supernatural Jesus have already ignored the first verse of the earliest gospel written, namely Mark, where it says,
"Here begins the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God."
And whatever "Son of God" may mean to us, it may mean something different to a Palestinian Jew with his mind and imagination steeped in the Old Testament writings. Whatever it may have meant to them, it certainly conveyed the idea of the supernatural character of Jesus. So, we freely grant that you're getting different angles on Jesus here. But let's assume that we are getting different angles of essentially the same person, and that the Synoptics tell us more things about Jesus' humanity than John does, and that John tells us more about Jesus' deity than the Synoptics. But even in the fourth gospel, Jesus gets thirsty and has to have a drink of water, and that's a very human thing. Now, what I've been doing here is to present the differences which have led people to downgrade the fourth gospel in terms of its trustworthiness and to suggest ways in which those differences may be satisfactorily accounted for without downgrading the fourth gospel.
Who wrote the fourth gospel?
Now, there is probably no single disquieting judgment by New Testament scholars today more widespread than that John, Jesus' disciple, did not write the fourth gospel. It may seem impious to you to think or to believe, but a great many people believe it. They think, well, it appeared late in the century, and it does not give us this hollowized picture of Jesus. Therefore, it probably doesn't really come from John, Jesus' disciple himself. It may have come, they say, from one of John's disciples. or it may have come from some unknown religious genius of the early 2nd century. But there are a great many people working in New Testament scholarship today who would deny that John, Jesus' disciple, wrote the 4th Gospel. If you do a review paper relating to the December 25, 1964 Life magazine double issue on the Bible, you will discover that Robert Kaufman does not believe that John, Jesus' disciple, wrote the 4th Gospel. I forget what he thinks. He may think that another John, whom we otherwise do not know, wrote the 4th Gospel. And so, because this is a widely accepted dictum in New Testament study, it seems good to summarize in a formal way the evidence that John, Jesus' disciple, did write the 4th Gospel. And the reason for doing this is this. If this John wrote it, then we are in touch with the reports and the interpretations of an eyewitness. If it comes from some other person of a later time, then we do not have eyewitness reports here, nor do we have the interpretations which come from someone who knew Jesus and was acquainted with these things. And so it seems important to spend some time talking about the evidences that the 4th Gospel was written by John, Jesus' disciple. And again, this will seem a little technical, but then, after all, we are interested in hard data and not just theological a priori. This does not downgrade our theological a priori's. I have them, and so do we all. It just says, where we possibly can, we want to bring in good, solid, factual information to back up our judgments on these things. All right, here are 5 important facts bearing on the authorship of the 4th Gospel.
1. An eyewitness.
In this, as in both of these things really, I'm summarizing material which F.F. Bruce has given you. We'll begin with what the Gospel says about itself. It claims to have been written by an eyewitness. John 21:24 is the next to the last verse of the Gospel, and it says, referring back earlier in the chapter to a story which has just been told, and let me quote this,
"Peter turned and saw following them the disciple whom Jesus loved, who had lain close to his breast at the supper and had said, 'Lord, who is it that is going to betray you?' When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, 'Lord, what about this man?' Jesus said to him, 'If it is my will that he remain with me until I come, what is that to you? Follow me.' The saying spread abroad among the brethren that this disciple was not to die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he was not to die, but, 'If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you?' This is the disciple who is bearing witness to these things, and who has written these things, and we know that his testimony is true."
Now, who these we are, we'll have to talk about in a minute. But notice that the next to the last verse of the Gospel attributes the writing of the Gospel to someone who has just been mentioned. Now, the two people whom have just been mentioned were Peter and a person who is not named, but who is described through the Gospel as the disciple whom Jesus loved. And this is universally admitted to mean John, Jesus' disciple, the brother of James, the son of Zebedee. Nobody thinks that it was really Peter who wrote this. We've already seen reason to connect Peter with the Gospel according to Mark. And there is general agreement that what this verse means is the 4th Gospel was written by John, who is mentioned indirectly in the preceding story. Now, you may wonder why this isn't enough to convince anybody. And the reason is, scholars think it was not uncommon for people in the New Testament and in the late Old Testament time to write religious works and then, to be sure of a good hearing, to assign them to somebody more important than the writer really was. I'm not sure whether this was really done widely or not. It's quite certain that there are some books, some writings, particularly from the intertestamental period, which have been ascribed to great religious figures but could not possibly have been written by those figures. There are writings from the intertestamental period, for example, that are ascribed to everybody from Enoch, the seventh from Adam, on down to Solomon and Isaiah. But it's quite clear that these writings were composed in the second and third centuries BC and weren't really written by Abraham or anybody else. They were only a tribute to those worthy. It's just like, well, I'll write some good edifying material for the benefit of the church, but then nobody knows who I am, so I'll publish it under the name of Billy Graham. And then everybody will read it, and I don't care if I don't get the credit for it. But these good ideas will circulate and do the church good, and that satisfies my soul. Well, the people who say it wasn't written by John, Jesus' disciple, just say, yeah, it says so, but then that's wrong. The guy that wrote it wanted everybody to read it, so he attributed it to John. Okay, my point is, you've got to take a little seriously what the book says about itself. And there may be some literary conventions working here that we don't agree with. I just really have some reservations about this whole business, especially among Christian writings.
2. Internal evidence.
Internal evidence supports this claim that the fourth gospel was written by John. Now, what will you do if you want to try to discover whether this Greek writing was written by the man it's ascribed to, or was written by someone else? Well, if it was written by an eyewitness, then you would expect that it would show the kind of knowledge about Jewish affairs of the time which an eyewitness would have. If it was not written by an eyewitness, you might expect that it would be flawed of that knowledge. Suppose John was written by somebody who lived in the year 115 AD. All right, what does he know about Jewish customs in the year 30 AD, or 85 years before? Customs may not change that fast in a more slowly moving society, but a lot had to happen to Judaism in between times. The city of Jerusalem had been destroyed, for one thing, and the Jews themselves dispersed widely. So in the intervening years, a tremendous lot had happened. Would you expect a guy who is not an eyewitness composing rather freely a narrative to give you specific and accurate information about Jewish affairs of the time? No. You'd think it would be vague and perhaps mistaken. And what you find is internal evidence. What you find when you go to the fourth gospel is that it is specific in its knowledge of a great many things in Jewish lore. For example, the geography of the city of Jerusalem and Jewish holy days. These holidays were no longer being observed after 70 AD when the city was destroyed. But John's gospel knows about them and knows when they occurred and knows what happened on them. John describes the different customs about these holidays. Again, he knows other types of Jewish customs. For example, he understands about the stone jars that were present at the wedding in Cana, and what they were there for, and so forth. So there are a lot of details in the gospel which it seems likely only an eyewitness would know, and someone who was writing later, after tremendous upheavals had fallen upon Judaism, would not be likely to know. Now you see, that doesn't prove that John wrote it, but it does support the gospel's own claim that John wrote it. As Peter could just as well have written it, because Peter knew what Jerusalem was like and understood those Jewish customs. All this internal evidence does is to reinforce rather than contradict the claim which the gospel makes about itself.
3. External evidence.
And that's also true about this third point. External evidence supports the claim. Now I here have to anticipate something that we'll discuss in detail later on in the unit. I will try to hit the high points and you'll understand it better when we spend a day or two talking about this. It would help us if we had the scroll, which was the original writing of the fourth gospel. But we don't. I've already indicated we don't have the original writings for any of the books of the New Testament. They may be in existence, but we don't know where they are. My own guess is that they wore out and were destroyed a long time ago, and we will never find them. Anyhow, we don't have the originals. Now, when you don't have the original, you're free to make up all kinds of stories about when the original was written. And in fact, it has only been within the last 50 years that things have changed about this. The scholars used to say the Gospel of John was written in the middle of the 3rd century, 250 or 200 AD, and there wasn't anything to prove any different. Of course, it says it was written by an eyewitness. But if you subscribe to this false attribution theory, you're covered. Now, if we had some copies of the original and knew when those copies could be dated, this would help. In recent years, copies of John's Gospel have been discovered, and scholars have learned how to date these ancient copies. In fact, the earliest copy of any part of the New Testament is, interestingly enough, part of the Gospel according to John, Jesus' disciple, and not another John or some other unknown religious genius. These are the considerations which led F.F. Bruce and certain other scholars to hold that the fourth gospel represents eyewitness reporting by a man who was part of Jesus' party from its beginning, and indeed one of the inner circle of Jesus' disciples. This means that of the four gospels, two of them very clearly rest on eyewitness authority, Mark resting on Peter, and John resting on his own experience. There is Matthew, though it seems that Matthew has not drawn heavily on his own experience, but rather has made use of Mark and the collection of religious teachings by Jesus that he had access to. And of Luke, no one has ever thought that Luke was an eyewitness, but he was a good researcher and a competent historian. This is something we will talk about in the next lecture.
4. Hellenized Jesus.
I want to say a word about the possibility that in the intervening years when John was brooding over the events that were part of Christ's life and Christ's teachings, John may unconsciously have Hellenized this Jesus to whom he was so devoted.
Hellenized here means to incorporate Greek philosophy and concepts to explain who Jesus was.
This, of course, is possible. And by the time John wrote, there weren't many eyewitnesses left to check on the things that he said and put forth. It's also true that when you read John's Gospel, it seems as though it's hard to tell where Jesus' speaking stops and John's writing begins. Their styles have become very much the same, as if John has rephrased Jesus into a contemporary style of writing at the time.
5. Accuracy with perspective.
Finally, it isn't necessarily the person who writes immediately who gives you the most accurate understanding of the time. It may be that the historical interpretation with perspective of time is the more accurate. And if I sit down to write now a history of the presidency of FDR, there will be some things which are not yet clear that will become perfectly clear by the end of the century. There will be some things that come to light, if the planet holds together that long, which will make the interpretation of the FDR presidency much clearer and much more accurate. So the interpreter who works at a far distance from the events is not necessarily handicapped. He is the one with perspective, and he may be able to give an interpretation which is close to the truth. And is not this what John has done? The synoptics emphasize what Jesus did, the events of his life. They know that he was a divine person, but they aren't concerned to make much of that. John, who looks back on this from the end of the century, says the thing that really stands out, that Jesus was God in human form, and he presents in the fourth gospel a great emphasis on the deity of Christ, while not overlooking his humanity. Now, is John wrong in this? Or may it not be that, with the perspective of passing decades, John sees more clearly, even than the synoptics saw, that this is an emphasis which has got to be made? And so that's the kind of presentation I'd like to make about the fourth gospel. The reasons for thinking it can be trusted, and especially the reasons for regarding its interpretation as a legitimate and bona fide one. Now, in the next lectures, I want to take up the question of independent evidence. Now, by this I mean, what evidence is there outside the Gospels that there was such a person as Jesus? For example, do any of the secular historians of the time know about him? Is there evidence independent of the Gospels which reports that there was such a person? There is this kind of evidence. It is a variety of sorts, some of it written, some of it archaeological. So we are going to take a little digression here and investigate what we can find out about Jesus and about the New Testament without depending on the Gospels themselves. All right, that sets us up for next week. That's all for this morning.
Thank you for listening to the Basic Christianity Podcast, a college lecture series by Dr. Stanley D. Walters, presented by his student, Dr. Stanley D. Williams. The 33 lectures are found in Dr. Walters' fully illustrated book, Basic Christianity, Facts, Evidences, Reasons, available at ninevascrossing.com. Thank you for listening.